Well, it's a beautiful day as we record episode 124 of the Outside Centre Film Podcast. Whether it's a beautiful day when you listen to episode 124 of the Outside Centre Film Podcast, I don't know. But what we can promise you is what I promised you basically last week and the week before that. The good films always end up coming. Just like I said with Paul Devine, Ben, we had a bit of a rocky start ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
But as always, patience is a virtue. The films will always present themselves, even though we just do exactly the same thing on each and every episode. We find three world cinema films, we talk about them, and as if by magic, we tend to start off a bit on the slow side, and then, bam, interesting films. We had Giraffe last time. There was both of our films of the week. Let's see where we are with this. And we're off to Africa, first of all, for a film called Air Conditioner. And it's from Rotterdam 2020. Rotterdam was the thing that happened this year. And thank God it did, because we've had a lot of films from there so far this year. The film is actually called Air Conditioner. And it's actually a conspiracy theory movie about air conditioning units, Ben. Yeah. Basically, we are following people around. One in particular, Mata Kado, after his boss's aircon unit breaks down. And he's tasked with getting it fixed by the morning. There's a bit more to it than that, which I'll get onto and you'll get onto. But one of the main reasons I'm recommending this is because it ticks an important box for me. And that box is what I basically want every piece of world cinema to do. And that's take me to your country, please. This movie is Angola, and this movie can only be Angola. Next, what I want every piece of world cinema to do is teach me something I didn't know about the people from that country or the country itself. In Angola, and you hear about it on the radio in this film, there is a rise in deaths of heat-related deaths. Not only because, as I say, the heat actually killing people, but the aircon units themselves are hazards that fall from the sky. I had no idea about that. It's actually a thing, and this movie captures that quite a lot, which we'll get into. And if that wasn't enough, another thing that I want every piece of world cinema to do, and this particularly applies to African cinema, though I dare say the Far East as well, and maybe several kind of like Baltic and Eastern European countries could do with heeding this. Use some reasonable equipment to make the film, please. Like, I understand that not everyone has millions in the budget for this and millions in the budget for that, but I want to feel that I'm in a country because of the world you build and the people that are in it, not just because you're using low budget technology, because you're in a low budget country, for should we say. You know, and in Africa's case, that really does hold its cinema back, despite the apparent wealth that is littered throughout the continent. So, you know, just because you happen to be using a low budget handheld camera with a grainy lens, like, does that mean that has to dictate an entire country's output, really? But, you know, does that then become acceptable because it's Africa, for example? Here, that does not happen. This is very much a modern-looking, modern African piece of cinema. And as I say, it ticks a lot of boxes for me. Yeah. Is it perfect? No, but it's quirky, it's funny, it's unusual. And I want people to see it if they get the chance, Ben. And I should also say, it's my film of the week.
We've dovetailed here. This is also my film of the week as well.
What's going on? Is it? Have we got coronavirus without even knowing about it? Because we have never agreed so much, Ben. This is scary.
I had a long think about it, but this edged it for me over the others this week. I think this is my first ever Angolan film.
And mine, of course.
So what?
Even for the podcast, it is. Yeah. What introduction?
This has so much going on for it. It manages to be both very, very big and very small at the same time. It works as a story. It works as a piece of cinematic art. It works as a kind of socio-economic comment on Angola. It works as something mystical. It works as something real. It's just got an awful lot going on, and I completely concur on the take me to your country thing, because I really got the feel of Angola in this movie. It was palpable, visceral. It's such a textured film, and the look is really, really something. I'm going to come back onto the look again later on. But I just loved the use of lighting in this film. It just elevated it to something else. It's world building but it's specifically Angola. And I don't know, there was so much going on. It's a really magical film. I would like this film to be the first Angolan film that a lot of people see. Really something. And I loved the performances as well.
Yeah.
Everyone in it. There's no bum notes whatsoever. Whether you're a leading member of the cast or whether you're just an extra who's just watching a game of drafts happen, everyone in this film is just kind of electric and convincing. And it's extremely creative as well, with very, very kind of, you know, there's not many places they can go or things they can do in this story, but it manages to be so creative at points. The conversations that happen without anyone speaking, just these, everything done with eyes, just beautiful, beautiful little touches in here. Really, really love this film. It left me at the end with no answers either, which I think is a very important thing for films to do sometimes. It just raises more questions about things. It's not closed at all. It's completely open. Dreams wander into real life. It's just a hell of a thing. It was really, really something.
I mean, yeah, quite. I haven't quite stopped thinking about it since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've mentioned conversations that happen via just looking and stuff like that. There's a reason for that, and that's because I believe it is Matakado himself.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell this is in reference to former conflict, and he has obviously recovered from said conflict, or at least in part, but his hearing hasn't.
Yeah.
And you just know it's some sort of like militia related thing. It doesn't really go into any detail about that, but it's made it clear that conflict has been served in Angola. He was part of it and his hearing hasn't recovered. And yet he's able to communicate with people sometimes via just thoughts, but not everybody, but some people. I mean, you've also mentioned dreams. Now, I really, the worst thing about this film is that you just want to talk about it so much, which, if you do that too much, it actually takes away the excitement and joy of other people discovering it for themselves.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say a couple of words. We're going to leave it at that, and you can obviously jump in and agree with me on that. This film very much does pay tribute to the DeLorean.
Yeah.
And that entire premise about a car that's linked with time and linked with memories, which again goes back to what I've just said with Matakado, is just fabulous. Like, it's just perfect. And even that even links into aircon units that make it work there with power and kind of electricity and stuff. And, you know, what is happening to all the broken down aircon units? It's just fantastic. It sounds utterly ridiculous. And it is, but in the best possible way.
When you're watching it, nothing feels ridiculous at all.
Oh, it's complete buy-in. Complete buy-in, utterly from start to finish. Yeah. And a lot of what you've said is all correct, and it's all down to Friedeek.
Yes.
Now, Friedeek is the director, and with a name like Friedeek, and that is literally his name, not surname, not first name, it's Friedeek, you think, well, who is this guy? Well, surprisingly for me, he was born and bred in Angola. So, again, captures the film, able to do so, has the knowledge, has the wherewithal to make a film about something so strictly Angolan, because he is Angolan, so I'd expect no less. However, he went to American film school.
Ah, interesting.
So again, that links in and ticks a box for me. He's been to American film school. And one thing that we can say about American film school, they have good tech over there.
They do. They do.
And they rent that out quite willy-nilly to people. So he's obviously took on the importance of having some decent equipment to make the film, which makes me sound very, very snobby, and that is not the intention. But, you know, as much as I do like handheld, grainy films sometimes,
it's
also nice for cameras to be static sometimes. That are actually modern pieces of equipment, and this film does it.
He could just be using a glide cam or something like that. Or there's a lot of smooth tracking shots. If you're a fan of follow shots, you're going to love it. and the camera is super smooth in there. But it's somehow not just the smoothness of the camera movements. It's also the clarity of the image as well. That sounds like a bogus thing to say about film, but this does have a very special look to it. I know what you mean about the grainy handheld camera. This is the opposite of that, but that's not to say that it's a kind of glossy plastic entertainment piece at all.
The comping is hidden here, if there is, and there obviously will be some, yes. because it's about aircon units falling from the sky and creating havoc. And you cannot. I'm sure they would have done some actually happening, but a lot of it, you know, was obviously put in. But it looks, it looks real. It looks convincing. Yeah. And as you say, there's no answers. And there's no answers because there's no questions. And there's no questions because everything is presented to you perfectly well. Yeah. Like, you get what the film's about. You know who everyone is. You get what the film's trying to say. And yes, there's always time. Of course there is, for films that make you think and make you ask questions. But equally, again, sometimes it's nice to have all these things presented to you that isn't in a stereotypical, boring, predictable, linear way. Mm. And you'll know, and despite the fact that we both know, and everyone will get onto this film and enjoy it, you're never quite sure when the film will take you next.
Yeah.
I mean, the story's straightforward in that sense, but it kind of veers off into lots of different places, lots of different people. The way that it plays with air conditioning units is just extraordinary. Like, the only film that sort of this made me think of in any way, shape or form, and I don't know whether you've seen or not, it's Rubber from Quentin Dupuis.
Mm. I know of Rubber. I haven't seen it. But
I mean, that was obviously a film about a killer object. Yes. In that instance, a car tyre. And it made the film just run with it, literally, like a car tie that would just do crazy, crazy, crazy things. Yeah. That, but even then, you know, you've got air conditioning units not doing crazy things here. So it's not a satire in that sense. They made it real. So again, that's how much of a struggle it's been for me to think of any other film that I've seen in the continent or Angola itself or whatever outside of it that would make me think, well, a companion piece to this film. It's just, it feels unique to me. And that's almost impossible these days.
Mm. I did find myself watching it thinking, like, how would you have reached this conclusion, making a movie about this at any point? The pitch for it just sounds so dumb. It's about a guy fixing air conditioning units. Yeah, cool, pass. Move on to the next one. But somehow it's super compelling. And that thing you mentioned about how it keeps you guessing all the time. You don't even have Matasado. He's not even your main character for the first like 10 minutes of the film. You're following someone else.
That's right. Yeah.
You think he's just a side character, and then suddenly the film goes off and follows him. So 10 minutes in, without doing anything, it's not like a psycho switch or anything, but you're just on your toes. You don't know where this film is going. And then they start introducing these kind of mind reading bits. It was a hell of a thing. Really enjoyed it. Also, what I learned is in Angola, when you're playing drafts, the king can move as far as he wants. I'm expert, but I don't think that's the way we play in the UK. King, you know, it can move backwards and forwards, but not as many squares as it likes at any one time. Interesting.
I mean, I didn't even take that on board. I mean, that's in the film. And unfortunately, Angola didn't have a film for the foreign language Oscar nomination process this year. I hope if they want to submit something, has to be this.
Yeah,
and sure. I'd be really interested to see if it would get anywhere, not because we both love it necessarily, but because it's made by a guy that's obviously come to America and learned something.
Yep.
And they do like to kind of reward that kind of thing. Yep. Like, it's very clearly, quote unquote, not a world cinema film.
Yeah.
It's cinematic and it's pretty, but not too pretty and all the rest of it. So it would, I think, honestly, this would feel, the film would tick a lot of boxes for that process of getting forward for the Oscar nomination for foreign language cinema. I'd be really interested. And probably it would get some airtime in the States because the director's been in the States.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think, and you know, that's a hot country too, America, and it has lots of aircon. I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading far too much into it, but I'd love to see it put forward, and I'd be intrigued to see how far it would go. So all eyes on that. And actually, Ben, one final thing for me. Mm. We haven't even mentioned the music yet. There's this piece of music that's kind of constant all the way through, and it's a beautiful piece of sort of Angolan jazz beat kind of...
Yeah.
And it's kind of present, and you enjoy hearing it when it's there, and it kind of follows everybody around, and you're, but it kind of takes the form as like a movement piece. So when people are moving in the streets and walking down the streets, the music is there with them, and it's like, this is great as well. On top of everything else, you've got great music too, and it's not your tribal, dare I say, forgive me for being, you know, stereotypical, but It's not your African tribal music that you hear all the time in African cinema. It's not windpipes. It's not this. It's not drums and everything. This is just like accomplished music as well.
It's
so
a contemporary film.
Very contemporary. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, contemporary in all facets.
But also 100% Angolan.
From
what I know of Angola as well. But it's not like this guy has gone to America, learnt everything, and come back and made an American film in Angola. He's done the opposite of that. He's brought the techniques back and made an Angolan film. Contemporary, modern, bitey, questioning, mystical. Just, yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
Lovely stuff. Over to Berlinale then. Berlinale 2020, Ben, with Sisters at the End of the World.
Yeah, Sisters in the End of the World.
Oh, in the End of the World. Right.
Which I kept tripping up on that over and over again. So this is the debut feature film from, don't make me say their names, only... Vinicius Lopez and Luciana Mazzetto, about whom I know nothing apart from the fact that they have worked together on various short films before this one. This is after Air Conditioner. This is pretty damn straightforward. It's about two sisters who are traveling from the home of their mother, who they live with, who is suffering from a disease, traveling to a very small town in Brazil to visit their father. None of this comes out for a while. You don't know why they're on this journey. You don't know what's happening with their mother. You don't know they're going to see their father. You don't know why they're going to see their father at any point. And all of this is played out along a kind of backstory of supernatural events, if you like. The younger sister appears to have some kind of superpowers. Brazil is caught in a series of bizarre events, and there seems to be some kind of asteroid or comet or something heading towards the Earth as well. So what you have here is a kind of coming of age story with superpowers in Brazil, which also makes time for a small family unit story as well.
Yes.
There's a lot going on in Sisters in the End of the World.
That's correct.
This was my second contender for Film of the Week. And I also fell into a deep, deep reverie about the look, feel, and style of comparing Sisters in the End of the World with Air Conditioner. I kind of got the feeling that all of these filmmakers, are kind of tapping into the same kind of, I don't know, the same kind of brain out there, because you've got a lot of things which you don't often see in films, which are in Sisters in the End of the World and Air Conditioner. So you've got this use of colored lights, which isn't all that common. You see it a fair amount, but it's a visual style. Both films have it. And then you've got the use of subtitles for scenes where no dialogue is being heard. And that for me was just fascinating, that these two films both have sequences where characters are talking to each other without talking. Oh, interesting. And you've also, both films are kind of steeped in this kind of socioeconomic realism versus magical realism worlds. And they both do it really well. Sisters in the End of the World is essentially about teenage girls. So at times it's pitched up quite high, whereas Air Conditioner is, I don't know, adults maybe. So everything is quite low key and fairly chill. It feels like everyone in Air Conditioner is just trying to make do as best as they can, whereas the characters and Sisters in the End of the World are finding this, making a mark on the world for the first time. It is at points really, really wonderful, this film. There are the various moments which I loved. It has wonderful sound, a great sense of visual style. It's never boring, apart from the occasional moments when it dips a little bit. You get, there's two or three sequences which are a little bit music video-y.
Yes.
and those,
very much so.
Yeah, and I really wish they weren't there. I mean, but you know what? What you gonna do? There are other moments that could be a bit music video-y, but offer something more, perhaps. Maybe that's up to an individual viewer. Occasionally, I got a little bit fed up with the fetishization of the older sister, which happens quite a lot throughout the film. But then you're like, well, what are you doing? What are you saying, Ben? The film is fetishizing young women. Oh, where's your argument there? I'm like, okay, fine. Everything does it. But it just, because these are two essentially kids, it just felt a bit off every now and then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like it. a very interesting take on Brazil as well. A lot of love for this film. Not my film of the week, though.
Yeah, for me, it's an okay film. Would I want to watch it again? No. Do I recommend it? Maybe. It's very clearly a rampant feminism film.
Yeah.
To me. It doesn't even disguise it for me either. I mean, you know, and that's not for me to say whether they should or shouldn't have done that. It's their prerogative. They're the directors. That's fine. Is it something I can get behind? Not really. I kind of find the whole gender discussion to be quite tedious, to be honest with you. Like, you know, especially since we as a podcast, we don't even consider gender. We just do films. We actually, if anything, we consider the passport, not who's made the film. So again, it's not a debate that I ever feel compelled to get involved with. And, you know, again, whenever you have feminism in a film, it always links back to feminism making films or the industry as a whole. And that's in this film too. And again, I find that quite boring. But anyway, so basically, Sisters in the End of the World. Essentially, the film had a choice to make. Either focus on the sisters, focus on the end of the world, or do a mixture of the two. And for me, this film focuses on the sisters above all else. And it's not even close, really. There are bits of all three things. But for me, it's a film on the sisters, which if I was choosing... if I had a choice, if I was directing, I also would do that. I would focus on the sisters. So that was fine. However, what they decide to focus on with the sisters in this movie stops the film being overly enjoyable other than okay for me. I'm thinking particularly, you've mentioned a few sequences. I also have a few sequences. Oh, there's an odd scene when the two sisters arrive and they go to a bar. They arrive in this hotel in Brazil, and they go in a different part of Brazil, and they go to a bar, and the younger one goes on stage and sings this song that goes on forever.
Oh yeah, I drifted off a bit.
Yeah, I checked out. Honestly, I thought, well, I'll go and do something else and come back when she stops singing. Like, why? And I suppose, like, again, something to do with the hurricane lyrics, like very, very deliberately. And I thought, no, don't hit me on the head with this. I can figure things out. I don't need to know. I don't need this, really. It's quite apparent that something's going on anyway. Likewise, along those lines of it being of checking out, when the two sisters make some sort of den under the sheets in a room and shuffle around in it.
Don't talk about that scene.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, it really like, goes. Considering the film has a short running time already, that scene was long.
And not only that, but they slow it down. So even at normal speed, it would have gone on forever. They actually slowed the fucking thing down. It's like, what are you doing?
That scene, when I was working out what my film of the week is, that scene was like a big X mark.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, even if they took that scene out, the film would be missing some things for me. But that really honestly spoilt the film for me from then on. And then, of course, there was the stuff where they were making shadow puppets for what felt like 3 fucking hours. Like, again, no, I don't need to see Sister Bonding. It's fine, really.
It's okay. I was okay with the shadow puppet. The shadow puppets comes right after the bubbling glass of water. Is that?
Oh, God, yeah.
I was really like, okay, Ben, how would you make that glass of water? Think about it. And I really zoned in. Like, thinking about that. I've got it. I know how they did it, I think.
Winter Brothers, how he changed colour of that water towards the end of that film. Yeah. Was Dre and magic. I've got all the time in the world for that. This film, I don't want to be seeing any bubbling water, Ben, to be honest with you. Yeah. Not on top of seeing shadow puppets and on top of seeing singing and on top of seeing Den. Now, again, I'm sure some of you be thinking, get over it, what's the point? But actually, it really does interfere with this movie because you finally reach the point where things are starting to kind of get interesting. A lot of the beginning is just a journey. And it's ponderous and it's slow and because it's focusing on the sisters, it's sisters being sisterly things. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about all the other stuff that's going on. So it's ponderous and slow and you're just waiting for things to kind of get going a bit more. And then you finally reach the point where, oh, there's the father they're meeting up with. Oh, but the father's disappeared. So it's back to the sisters again. Yeah. So it's like I never ever quite felt that I was on some sort of a journey with them. Again, it just felt ponderous to me, which is a big problem. And like it feels like an hour to me since we actually first meet the dad.
Yes.
And then actually going to visit the house later on. It feels like an hour. It probably is an hour. I mean, I think they meet him about 45 minutes in. And then 40 minutes later, maybe, it's not an hour, about 40 minutes, we will then see the father again. It's like, well, bearing in mind that the whole film is about essentially going to live with the father for certain reasons we won't spoil, then why 40 minutes? It just felt ridiculous to me, because that's where all the drama essentially actually happens later on.
It's a good question. I mean, a counter argument would be that these filmmakers are not particularly interested in mining that drama, and they're more interested in a kind of sensual perception of the world.
Correct.
Thing.
Absolutely correct. And this is a film that, much like A Yellow Animal that myself and Paul Devine discussed from Brazil, so interesting, but Yellow Animal riffed off a lot of genres of film.
Yeah.
This film also does it. So it must obviously be something in Brazil that people are just now riffing off all the genres of movies, like horror film in the car. And you've also got a French drama in the TV screen. There's a conversation that takes place, and we won't go into any more detail than that, but you watch the conversation take place between the older sister and the father via watching TV.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
For me, it was odd, really. Like, but then it sort of makes sense when they riff another genre of movie in the car, as I say, horror movie later on. Very deliberately, you know, 80s indie horror film, or just 80s commercial horror film, for that matter. So, okay, you do it again, I get what you're trying to do. But at the time when you see it, first of all, it's like, oh, why am I watching some sort of melodramatic French thing on a TV screen?
Yeah.
That has more more enforced fake melodrama than any of the other bit of the film up to that point.
So we're in a kind of postmodern environment, like a kind of Tarantino thing, where they're picking and choosing different things, putting it together. That would explain a lot, actually. I still think it's deeply fascinating, the connections between this film and Air Conditioner, because I highly doubt these filmmakers ever met each other. They've watched a whole bunch of things, and yet they produce films that have like a stick of rock. They have things running all the way through them, which are just very, very similar at points, and which you don't see every day. I found that absolutely fascinating. Everyone like tapping into this unconsciousness where they're getting their ideas from. They get a thumbs up from me just because of that, just because of the air conditioner similarities.
I mean, yes, to be associated with a better film than yourself. Yes, we've done that before and we should do it again. That's absolutely acceptable to me. If any bad film makes me recommend a good film, then great. I wouldn't say this is a bad film, it's just an odd film for me. Yeah. Like, and actually, comparison to Air Conditioner stopped for me in terms of the technical quality of the film, because we talked about special effects for air cons falling from the sky and stuff, and it looks pretty damn realistic to me. Here, it's comp to hell, and the special effects look shit. I mean, there's a moment with a hurricane. We'll leave it there.
That is the low.
That's low honestly light. The last time I saw shit like that was from M. Night Shyamalan, who I love. But that doesn't mean I love this. I'll give him a free pass because he can tell a story. This, I'm not entirely sure. And that the hurricane was appalling, and even the comedy thing was also quite poor. Really,
I quite liked the comedy.
No, it was a bit nah.
Do you know, we talked about this film for quite a while now. Neither of us have said dinosaur. I forgot about the dinosaurs.
What dinosaur?
Where was my head?
Sorry, what dinosaur?
they keep coming back to it. The elder sister wants to be an archaeologist and study dinosaurs, and she keeps talking about dinosaurs and the age of things and stuff.
There's a kind of
subtext thing about this moment versus the eternal, which again, I fall for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, A Yellow Animal had exactly the same stuff, but that took it to an extreme level, ridiculous in an interesting way. So yeah, it's a thing in Brazilian cinema then. It is interesting. Probably wouldn't have even noted that had I not seen A Yellow Animal last time out. So to see two Brazilian films take on a lot of the same things, just in obviously different ways because they're different films, is interesting. But okay, thumbs up from you, thumbs sideways from me on that one. My morning laughter, we'll finish off with Serbian film. Now, I don't really want to review this film, Ben, to be honest. I'd be quite happy to actually... I've got about two lines in front of me which would explain the beginning, the middle, and the end of the movie.
Yep.
So unless you feel passionately that you want to review this movie in depth, then by all means, let me know now, because I'm actually...
we have give people a flavour of what it's like and about a little bit without too many spoilers?
Oh, it's such... I don't know how I can do it without revealing what the whole film's about, because it's just, it's such a basic premise, and it's something I've seen a million times.
Yeah.
Oh God. Okay. Serbian film about a mid-20s man called Dejan. Still, he's still living with his parents. He hasn't got a girlfriend. He's got a boring job.
He's a teacher. I think a lot of teachers out there would be upset.
He's a teacher. That's the film.
Yeah,
all it would take for me to say eight more words,
yeah, and
it
would stop, don't say those
words. It would stop you needing to watch the film, which, bearing in mind, we've got 1.5 good films here, 2 for you, I'd actually sleep comfortably with.
I mean, I didn't love this film. I didn't hate this film. It was fine.
It was pointless. It was dreadfully pointless to me.
This is true too. It's a film about, it's a kind of comedy of awkwardness, if you like. It's a film that kind of revels in awkward situations.
This is not Curb Your Enthusiasm.
But it's not Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think the problem is just how...
It's not The Office.
It's not The Office. It's this central character who is basically just a little twig in a stream, just being taken this way and that. He doesn't have any agency. He never asks for anything. He never really does anything. One thing I will say about this film is that if you like static cameras and plastic bags in the foreground, you want to see My Morning Laughter, because there's a lot of that in this movie.
Oh, I was pissed at the door scene, which you're laughing because you know what I mean. Like, I'm sorry, the only person that can do that is one Michael Haneke.
Haneke came to mind for me times when I was watching this film. Can that be a bad thing necessarily?
It can be when it's fucking done like this.
I would like to know how long that door scene is. I mean, what the hell? I could go and find out. But that door scene was long. that was really long, and it was also kind of, it just highlighted exactly where the rest of this movie is going to go as well. I mean,
this is not the 71 fragments of chronology. This is not the table tennis scene from that. It's just staring at a door pointlessly. Yeah. And it becomes amusing because, and again, it's impossible to say without spoiling, so it's best not to say, but someone's coming back in the room. And you're just kind of waiting for that to happen. And it's kind of like, right, okay, so someone's coming back. So you may as well bleed and get on with it. And it's just an extra 20, 25 seconds too long to the point when it becomes farce.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't think it's 25 seconds. I think it's like 125 seconds.
Could be. But like, there's a moment when you're watching it, and being a Michael Haneke fan, you know when it feels... You've got used to him stopping that particular scene at the perfect moment, because he's mastered that entire scene in his entire life, his movie world. So when the table tennis scene ends in Haneke, it ends, and it feels like the right time for that scene to end, along with lots of other scenes of that type from MH. Here, it's like he's never seen anyone else do it. He's doing it. The director himself is doing it for the first time, and I think it actually did mean to stop 25 to 30 seconds previously. He was banging on the wall and the person didn't hear him. It's like, oh shit, I think I might have heard a bang. I better go now then.
Keep rolling.
We'll start it out. But no, it starts to feel uncomfortably long quite soon. So, you know, again, is that being harsh comparing somebody to Michael Haneke? Of course it is. But, because not everyone can be, very few can be. But when it's creating that sort of thought process, when you're trying to watch a movie, and it's already been a struggle to that point because of everything I said is true, it is just such a plain character. And the story is just so, you know, as you say, there's no agency to anything. The most interesting bit to me is at the beginning, when this particular character sort of has some sort of counselling, is it?
I'm not sure who that guy is.
But is it a job interview? Is it a moving house interview, or is it a council?
Is it, Or is it a therapist? Yeah, I'm not sure. That was 100% the highlight of the movie for me as well.
It was funny. It was essentially him getting absolutely slaughtered for not having a decent life.
Yep.
Diane, the character, but in a funny way, not in a Me Too way.
That guy is apparently a superhero of Serbian cinema as well. That actor, it's the last film he ever made. And that's a great scene for him. He's electric in it somehow, just being an old guy sitting in a chair talking. He is amazing, commands it. And it just goes to show how you can lift a film by having engaging actors in your film. The main guy is asked to play the character that he's playing. He's doing his job correctly. He's just, he just lacks everything. He's just a leaf in the wind. That's all he is. He barely speaks.
But actually, it's... you see, I mean, in that sense, it's not a difficult performance to act, I don't think.
No, not at all.
I don't want to necessarily criticise people's craft if it can help it, unless it's truly, truly deserved. Yeah. So he's been given a mediocre-ish brief. He has acted to his ability to that brief. He's not given much to work with. However, that if you do a film like this, you've really got to nail what humour there is.
Yeah.
And other than the agency, whoever the guy is.
Whoever he is, he's amazing.
The interviewee guy. Outside of that, it is such a plain film, plain story.
Yeah.
No nuance, no nothing. It's just everything is static all the time and brown and you know, whatever. Where some people can get away with that. I mean, next time, Ben, we will be reviewing a Swedish film from a director that has done very few films, but his entire raison d'etre is about the pointlessness and the staticness of life. But you compare something like that to something like this, and it's like, why would I even bother? And why would anybody else bother? That's the problem. You have to be so, so careful to make a film that is deliberately showing ordinariness and plainness. Because if you don't get more humour and get the humour right at the right times and right pacing, it ends up being a chore.
Yeah, all the pathos or whatever it is that's under that mundanity, whatever you're trying to mine out of that. I would agree. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from listeners who disagree on this one, to hear why it's so good. I mean, apart from the therapist, moving house guy, whatever, I will say I had a lot of time for the female lead in this film as well. I thought she was pretty good. Again, not given much to work with, pretty straightforward.
Mm.
But she managed to be pretty good with it.
I'm just not sure if the film actually, what it was really saying was boring. Is it teenage life in Serbia is boring? Is it Serbian working life is boring? Is it Serbian cinema's boring? Making Serbian cinema's boring? Like, this is when asking questions is the wrong thing and not having answers is the wrong thing. No. This is a very film that defines that as a problem. Air conditioning is completely the opposite. Doesn't need to be any of those things because, you know, all the rest of it. But equally, air conditioner could have been something like questions and answers, not having either of them and still being terrific because of the way that the story goes, the way that people act in it, you know, everything we've already talked about there. Here, the question and answers thing becomes a major, major issue. Because I'm just left baffled as to why the film was made.
Very good.
And fundamentally, if I'm asking why a film was made, you haven't done a very good job. I'm sorry.
Well, final counterpoint. After I watched this movie, I was left with a kind of, feeling.
100%.
So I went online and found some reviews just to see what other people were getting out of it. And I read one review of this film, which was glowing. Beyond all my expectations, and they said it had one of the best scenes in recent years in it. So there you go. We're quite wrong.
Is it that we are officially therefore wrong? Is it the scene that involves a bleeding body part?
Yes, it is. Yes.
I wonder why I thought of that. Yes, it was reasonably amusing. But again, when you work out who everybody is and why that might happen. The jokes sucks basically.
I didn't like that scene. I'll go.
No, it's anyway. Never mind my morning laughter from Serbia, and that's a shame. But never mind it because you've got other ones to watch. And we've got some more to watch next time, which we will do with Paul. Ben, of course, will be back in a month or so as well. So everybody, look after yourselves. You will want to come back because we have hit goals. We've got films, quality films every episode now. I can cast iron, guarantee it. So, so on that note, and why not spoil it any further, we'll speak to you soon.